friends. Welcome back to yet another episode of the new, improved and weekly What Page Are You On? It me, your good friend Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It is you, Alice Slater. How are you today, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am fine. We thought we would kick off the episode by telling you about a thing we're doing and we're hoping that you will do with us. So every year, the charity called Book Trust does a Christmas fundraiser, which aims to give free books to children in care, children who otherwise might not receive a book. And so we have set up a PayPal pool in which we can collect money from all our friends and listeners. However much you want to give, you can give it anonymously or not, that's fine. Any amount is completely fine. But yeah, we just thought we would do something nice this Christmas rather than be little Grinch hags, as is our want.
Especially as, you know, we don't have a Patreon, we don't ask for much. We thought this would be a really nice way of, like, giving something back to the universe for, you know,
in a bookish way.
Bookish.
Yeah. So we will put the link on our Instagram and our Twitter. We'll make it our pinned tweet. So by the time you hear this episode, it will be our pinned tweet. If you, for whatever reason, can't find it or don't use social media, just contact one of us and we will link you. It's a PayPal pool through my PayPal account. And yeah, so it's running until the 11th of December. And then on the 11th of December, however much money in it, we will then pass on to Book Trust. So I hope you want to just give a little something. This episode goes out on Black Friday. And, you know, maybe if you're buying some treats, you can throw a little £10 into the pot as well, should you so desire. Any amount gratefully received. So that's our little preamble to this ep. Alice, how are you? What have you been reading this week?
So it's been a good reading week. I still haven't finished a huge amount, but I did finally smash through Scabby Queen.
Oh, yes.
Yes, which I've been reading for a couple of weeks. It's by Kirsten Innes. Scabby Queen is kind of a combination between Daisy Jones and the Six and The Life and Death of Sophie Stark, which is by Anna North. It's basically about a kind of 90s pop star who was known for quite politically charged. She had a politically charged one-hit wonder about the poll tax. At the beginning of the book, this woman is in her 50s and she is found dead by one of her friends. And each chapter is from the perspective of someone else who has known this pop star throughout her life. And it's just fucking great. I really enjoyed it. It's very chunky. It took me quite a while to get through. But yeah, I really liked it. I recommend it. It's like a good, maybe a good Christmas read as something just fun, meaty, lots of variety. It kind of moves between place and time as well. So she's from a small village in Scotland, but her career takes her all over the country, like London, different parts of London, different parts of Scotland. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've heard of this book, but I just had really literally no idea what it was about. So I'm very interested to hear what it is about. And maybe I will read it.
I think you'd like it.
Yes. So this week I was mostly reading the book for this ep, but I also read The Great Cat Step by Alison Irvine. I mentioned it last week because I was plugging the Instagram Live that I was doing on Tuesday, which has now been and gone. I had a great time. I love talking to Alison. She's great. But yeah, I really liked this book. It's published by our good friends in the North, Dead Ink. And yeah, it's about a kind of a woman called Liz who goes back to her partner's grandmother's flat on the edge of the Campsie Fells in Scotland with her four-year-old daughter. And not long after they arrive there, her daughter becomes ill. She, kind of kid ill, not seriously ill, but she finally falls asleep and Liz realizes that they don't have any food in, so she takes her child to the supermarket in the night, leaves the child in the car, goes and gets food and returns to the car. Someone has tried to steal her phone, and when the police come, it sort of begins this thing of Liz being investigated for neglecting her daughter. And it is great, and I would strongly recommend it. And it's, we love supporting the indie press lifestyle. So that's,
we love an indie press, and we love a book with a strong hook.
Yes, that's Cat Step by Alison Irvine. And yeah, recommend. So that's what I've been reading this week. But obviously, apart from that, I have been reading The Truants by Kate Weinberg.
Our little book of the week.
Yeah, so that is why we are here. That is what has brought us together on this day.
So first of all, right, before we kick it off, let me just give a description of The Truants. So this is one that completely passed me by when it came out in hardback. But it was a Waterstones like thriller of the month or book of the month, something like that. And I was like, cool, very like bright yellow foresty cover with a hearse on it. I was like, caught my eye.
We love a hearse.
We love a good hearse. Still didn't, actually I have beef with the hearse, but we'll get to that. Still didn't pick it up though. And I don't know what moved me to. I think I saw a YouTuber talk about it and I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a go. It's described as like The Secret History meets Agatha Christie, which I was immediately suspicious of because every like dark academic campus novel always compared to The Secret History. And this is obviously no exception. But yeah, it's about a girl called Jess Walker who goes to university in East Anglia and kind of falls in with a little clique. And she has a maverick, enigmatic lecturer that she also kind of falls under the spell of. And it's about kind of a year in her life in this like weird situation. Bethany, what did you think?
Yeah, I liked her. I wasn't wild about it, and there were some things that I really didn't like, but I, in general, really enjoyed reading it. It's our kind of book.
That's the thing. It's so us, and even though it's flawed, and I knew that you wouldn't love it, I knew that you'd have a good time with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. I'm happy I've read it. And it is just exactly our, where we're at. It's, you know, I don't know how to describe it any more than that, but it's for us.
It's very, like, a paint-by-numbers book for us, like, you've got a good set, very character driven, a good mystery at the heart of it.
Yes.
It is like a classic page turner.
Yeah.
But I do have some beef as well.
I bet you do. But before we get to your beef, there is an additional reason why this book would appeal to you, Alice Slater.
Me personally?
Yes.
Yes, there is.
Share with the class.
The university is not named, but it is quite clearly my alma mater, the University of East Anglia, which has a very memorable, like very unique campus, a brutalist buildings surrounded by incredible nature. Like there's a beautiful lake, beautiful fields. Like it's just stunning. And yeah, so I really enjoyed that, but I feel like that's a very personal level of enjoyment because it was very nostalgic for me.
And you know, you don't often read a campus novel set in Norwich, do you? You know.
You don't.
It's very much like a kind of, I feel like it's a very American genre by and large. So it's nice to have one closer to home that you, Alice Slater, can relate to.
But that is actually one of my first, like one of the first thorns in my side.
One of your gripes.
Yeah, is that I felt like it was, you mentioned it being a very American thing. And I do feel like the city of Norwich is completely absent from this book.
Oh yeah, totally irrelevant.
Yeah, like it. The campus is set a little further away from the town centre, but it's still walking distance. And like, yeah, they at no point do they go to any pubs in Norwich. Whenever they go anywhere, they're going out into the countryside or out to the coast. And yeah, so it did kind of have that small town American campus town sort of feel, university town rather kind of feel. Like they don't interact with the city at all, and that's kind of the opposite of the way that East Anglia, UEA students interact with Norwich, because it's this really vibrant, amazing, buzzy city with loads of art, loads of culture, loads of great pubs. It's small, but it's there's fucking loads there. So yeah, I found
it feels like a very similar. So when I went to university the first time, before I dropped out and then went to UCL, I went to the University of Sussex, and
I did not know that about you.
Oh my god, we've been friends
for
some time, and we're just discovering new things about each other every day. So yeah, I went to Sussex, and it's a very similar vibe, like a 1960s university next to nature. next to a big, vibrant city. So, yeah, I feel like the idea of going to Sussex and never going into Brighton is absurd. So it's probably also absurd with Norwich. And it's also weird because, you know, the author did go to UEA. So it's not like it was written by someone who didn't know that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like it's a very conscious choice to
create this kind of claustrophobic insularness world. Yeah.
And I think also, like, it does benefit the plot in multiple points to kind of play up this idea of, like, the loneliness of the campus, that separation from everything else, that kind of bubble, like, feeling of being a student, which all would still exist. It's just when you have things like, they at one point, quite early on in the book, the student bar is closed, so they take a bottle of vodka out into the rain to go by the lake, and I just thought, you'd just go to one of the billion pubs that's, like, a 5-minute cab ride away. But, you know, I guess it's a choice that I think it works for the novel, so I will allow it. I would have liked to have seen a bit more Norwich flavour in there. What else did you feel? Give me some more of your thoughts.
So I liked the intrigue. I love a bit of intrigue. And I love that it wasn't... You knew from the kind of blurb and the vibe that, like, someone was going to die, but you didn't really know who or why or under what circumstances. So I found that very juicy and compelling. Did you?
I did. I guess the thing is, I didn't read the blurb. So I watched this YouTuber, this video. I think that's how I ended up picking up the book. And she said, just like The Secret History, you know from the very beginning that someone dies. And you fucking don't.
You don't really, like, do you? Yeah.
The Secret History. Famously, our friend Beth was reading The Secret History for the first time about a year ago. And she mentioned something about a death coming up. And I mentioned Bunny's funeral. And she was like, spoilers? What the fuck? Spoilers? And I was like, hun. And it turned out that she just skipped the prologue. She didn't clock there was a prologue.
She is so rogue. She is such a rebel.
So basically, I kind of had this weird experience with this book where I was like, I distinctly remember this YouTuber saying, you know right from the very beginning there's a death. Mm. But you actually don't. It's not in the text, and it doesn't happen till like halfway through.
I guess because of the prevalence of Agatha Christie in this book, like, she, you know, she's explicitly a part of the book. That's what the enigmatic lecturer specializes in. That's what one of her courses is about. I think it would have been strange if there wasn't some murder element to it.
I guess I just wish that that had been brought in earlier.
Mm, yeah, because it is. I think it's quite late. It does take a little while.
It's literally halfway through. Mm. And it doesn't have to, the murder doesn't have to happen earlier in the chronology of the story. But, you know, in the narrative, we could have had
a little bit more of a,
yeah, just give me some breadcrumbs, man. Give me something to get excited about. But the other, okay, let me talk about the hearse.
Let's talk about the hearse.
Why the fuck does he drive a hearse? Okay, so the main character is called Jess, and she fancies her best friend Georgie's boyfriend, whose name is Alec. So she has a crush on this guy, Alec. And for some inexplicable reason, he drives a hearse. That's his car. What kind of fucking goth geekmobile is that? Like, why the fuck does he have that car? Apart from it looks cool on the cover.
Yeah, and I feel like there were just a few things like that in the book where I was like, that's just silly. Like, it's just a bit silly. Like, there's this kind of, this character from one of their pasts, whose name is Sybil War. Like, you know, like Evelyn War. And her first name is Sybil and her last name is War. And I'm just like, that's just silly. Like, that's just silly. No one is called that. Like, what a silly, predictable, trying hard name. Like, ugh. When you can call your character anything, why would you give them such a ludicrous name?
And I guess part of that is, like, the whole kind of Agatha Christie vibe of things being a little bit larger than life.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that as a reader it doesn't keep kind of snagging. It keeps, like, that kind of stuff keeps pulling me out of the moment.
Like, yeah.
The relevance of the hearse is that it's a super memorable car with a big back. And that's important because the first time she sees the hearse, he's having sex in it. She can't see who he's having sex with. But the moment that she sees him, she's jogging on campus. And she's jogging through the woodland. And she comes across this car. And this was the first moment where I was like, this book has been written for the screen. because she's listening in her ear holes to Nina Simone.
Yeah, which I assume is like Cinnamon or Cinnamon. That was what I assumed it was. Yeah,
but that song is 10 minutes long.
Yeah,
it's a really long song. I love it, but the song isn't named, so there is plausible deniability here. But there's quite a lot of detail about like the kind of snare drum at the beginning, the plot of the lyrics. She sees this car as the song starts. She approaches it. She looks inside. She sees it that there's a couple having sex. She's kind of frozen to the spot. Then he looks up and clocks her, but she can't quite tell if he's seen her or not. And just then the song finishes, the spell breaks, and she runs away. Am I really supposed to believe that that took 10 full minutes?
Yeah,
10 minutes of listening to Cinnamon. And like that song does not abruptly end either. The ending is quite kind of drawn out. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like it was an odd, unnecessary detail to include the song that she's listening to. It's too built towards cinema rather than the page. And if you're not familiar with the song, it doesn't really make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's true. And like I understand so much of what we consume is visual, and there is like a kind of temptation to write things that you can see, but it has to also make sense on the page.
And I just think that, I guess, the title of the song, Cinnamon, it's almost too contrived that she's literally listening to a song about a sinner as she comes across this quite bizarre, almost sacrilegious thing, having sex in the back of a hearse, sex and death, you know. It just almost felt, maybe specifying the name of the song would have felt too much.
Yeah.
But I felt the inclusion of the song was too much anyway. Like, we've already crossed the line. We may as well go all the way and name the fucking song.
Yeah, and just let it be silly. It felt like it was quite a book that wanted to be serious but had quite a lot of silly stuff in it. But, you know, I didn't not enjoy it. Like, I am really glad that I read it.
Yeah, I feel like first half of the book where it's on campus was like a strong 4 out of 5 for me. The second half, however, the action leaves the university setting. The main character, Jess, goes to the university lecturer, Lorna Clay. She goes away with her. After a traumatic event, she needs some space. She needs some time to like recuperate. So in the Easter break, they go to this little kind of house in Italy, which is like super secluded. It's like on the lip of on the base of a volcano. And the landscape is very kind of difficult and rugged. And, you know, it's all like a kind of big overblown metaphor for where she is mentally. But as soon as we leave campus, my kind of interest waned a little bit.
Yeah.
So I found second half was more like a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right that the first half is a lot stronger when she's kind of turning up to university, getting ill pretty much straight away, not being able to kind of fully participate in the beginning of university life, and then meeting this girl who's very fun, kind of embroiling herself with this lecturer and getting a boyfriend. I really like that stuff, but yeah, I think you're right. It's not as strong in the second half.
And also, I just feel like, I guess those are all the things I love about campus novels. I love complicated friendships. I love that she fancied her mates, her slightly annoying friends, very sexy boyfriend. I loved all those kinds of awkward dynamics. And then, yeah, I guess the problem with, it's the same with any book. As soon as there's a holiday, it's almost like pressing pause on the action. Because everyone else is left at home and all of their stories continue. But you're kind of removing the narrator from the interesting situation and what then plays out. Although, you know, Lorna is still kind of in the position of antagonist. She's not really positioned that way for most of the book.
Yeah.
So it's not an exciting moment of like, oh my God, that it's going to be them, just them together. They're going to finally hash things out or whatever, you know. It hasn't actually been, she isn't positioned that way for that to be an exciting, interesting thing.
Yeah, and like for a lecturer, we see very little of her kind of presence in the university. Wouldn't you agree?
That like, yes, definitely.
There isn't much kind of teaching. We don't see, you know, there's maybe one or two scenes in a class with her, which I was a bit surprised by.
I think that it kind of assumes that the reader knows that relationship. Like,
yeah.
I feel that in The Secret History, Julian is really sold to us. Like, he's such a character in his own right that it seems completely understandable why the Greek class love him so much. I don't feel like Lorna is sold to us in this book in the same way.
She's just sort of charming and flighty and...
Well, the main thing is that the main character, Jess, was a big fan of her work.
Yes, that's why she's like, there.
Yeah, so Jess is there purely because of Lorna. And I think we just have to trust that her work is
daring and
strong
exciting.
Enough. Yeah, whereas, I don't know, I mean, personally, it didn't... I wasn't sold on it. You know, like the idea of this really young woman being really mad about this like literary theory from quite a young age just didn't, because yeah. That is what she writes about, right? She writes about theory.
Well, she's just kind of an academic of literature who specializes, like she seems like more of a biographer than anything else, but...
Yes, yeah. No, sorry, you're right. She's a biographer.
Something that I did like was the Agatha Christie stuff. Because I read an Agatha Christie book recently, which I didn't love, but I am interested in her as a concept. And I felt that that was quite a kind of neat little conceit hanging over the whole book.
And I think that certainly justified the way that the ending pans out, because the ending is very Christie-esque in yes. that everything is kind of delivered as information rather than experienced, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I think if the Agatha Christie element wasn't there, I would find that really bad storytelling. But
yeah.
it's a intentional trope, which you kind of have to hat tip.
Yeah, that worked for me. And I liked how much Agatha Christie there was in the book. Like that felt, quite a lot of it felt a little bit undercooked, but I felt like that was cooked just the right amount.
The other thing that bothered me about this, but this is like really minor, but I still have to bring it up. Why was she so obsessed with Georgie's mole?
Oh, yeah. And, like, towards the end, there's a bit where she calls it, like, her ugly mole. And it's really weird. Like,
she has,
yeah,
like,
that is
the
weird.
The beautiful best friend has a mole on the underside of her jawline. So it's not visible most of the time, but she is quite a larger-than-life character. She's very dramatic. So if she throws her head back in laughter or whilst dancing or whatever... She reveals this mole, and the main character is just obsessed with it. And I find it really strange.
Maybe the author thinks it's like a metaphor for something beautiful, but that has an ugly underside that you can only see once in a while.
It's just a bit much, isn't it?
It is just a bit much.
I think, like, let's leave people's moles alone. Like, I don't
Hands
think we need to
mole.
Use them. Yeah, we don't need to use them as, like, unkind metaphors, but that's just me.
No, I have no regrets about having read this, but it had a lot of potential for us to be, like, crazy about it, but it delivered slightly less than we were expecting, I think.
I guess the thing is, as well, is I feel like I read it in this kind of frenzy. Like, it was in the middle of lockdown, last lockdown, which was obviously the strictest one we've had since the spring. So I didn't really have anything else to do, and I really found myself completely gripped by it. And even though... I have so much kind of to critique about it. My reading experience was fucking gold star. Like, I had a great time, and I flashed through it in a way that I kind of want every chunky book to do that to me. I just felt so compelled by it.
Yeah.
And I guess I just want to share the love. I want everyone to have reading experiences like that. And like a book, you don't have to finish a book and think that was a fucking masterpiece for it to be a great time.
Yeah, and like we often are only talking about things that we are completely effusive about. So I think it is sometimes worth talking about something that on paper we should be 100% effusive about, but nonetheless, you know, it didn't quite achieve that, but nonetheless, neither of us regret reading it, and maybe our followers and listeners will also not regret reading it.
I also think there's a lot of value, because obviously we're not critics and we don't want to be critics, so we don't tend to talk about, in like the old version of the pod, we just wouldn't mention stuff if we had more negative things to say than positive, like that didn't interest us. But obviously now we're recording weekly, so we're going to talk about everything we read pretty much. So I think there is going to be a little bit more criticism than maybe we have
allowed
in the past.
Yeah.
But I guess it's always like coming from a good place. And for me, this reading experience was such a good ride. And there's nothing better than sliding into the DMs and being like, yeah, but what the fuck was the shit with the mole? And I can be like, yeah, exactly. What the fuck was the shit with the mole? That can also, you know, that's also part of being having fun with books, in my opinion.
I agree.
Also, this book did great, so I don't feel bad. If even one listener was thinking about reading it and is turned off, like, she sold enough copies, I don't feel too guilty.
Yeah, I think if you've been Waterstones Book of the Month or whatever, you're doing just fine, and you do not need your success will not live or die based on whether Alice and Bethany in your ear holes on a Friday liked it.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're listening and you have read it, please do feel free to slide in with your hot take. I'd love to know if generally people agree with us, if you thought it was flawless, if you thought it was too flawed for your liking. Let us know.
I always like to chat about this stuff, and I feel like we just have such delightful people who listen to our pod, who are so nice to us and want to engage with our content. So I'm always happy to receive a little DM.
Have you read any other books you would class as, quote unquote, as the kids are calling it, dark academia?
Well, obviously our fave is The Red Word by Sarah Henstra.
Oh my God, love that book so much. We talk about that in an episode called
Something
like...
Red.
Yes. Yes, something with red in the title.
It will be very obvious which episode it is. If you look on your app, and you'll know which one is the episode with that in it, because we talked about The Red Word by Sarah Henstra and a diabolical book that I absolutely hated called What Red Was by someone. And yeah, that was a rare instance of me going on the record and being like, I did not enjoy this book.
Can I just say that I absolutely love the fact that I just did a little preamble about, like,
we
did, you know, we're gonna
be
a little
that,
bit
yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be a little bit more critical now. Like, it's just part of doing a weekly pod. And then it's like, oh, yeah, apart from about a year ago where we absolutely...
eviscerated. that was definitely... Like, that was a rare one. But yeah, on that episode, we talked about The Red Word by Sarah Henstra, which is just wonderful. I love it. I cannot believe there are people out there who have read The Secret History but haven't read that, because... whenever you read The Secret History, you're like gagging to read something that's just as good. And I think that is one of the few things that kind of is.
And that's the thing, is I feel like when The Secret History is thrown into the mix, I think we said on that episode, it needs to be more than just a campus novel. There has to be a murder. For The Secret History comparison to be accurate, there has to be a murder. There has to be a clique. There has to be an enigmatic lecturer. Or, you know, a lecturer that has some kind of draw or magnetism about them. It has to have those three things. If you can also throw in a strong link to ancient Greece, then you're onto a good comparison. I feel like The Secret History is used whenever a book is campus-based and a little bit dark.
Yep.
And it's just
often,
lazy.
Yeah. And that, I just think, I don't believe it anymore. You know, maybe once I was like a naive little sprite in the forest and would have... read a comparison to Secret History and been taken in by that, but now I'm just so jaded that it doesn't work on me. It really has to deliver,
especially as like we now have this like emerging genre, dark academia, which, to be honest, I find it a little, you know, I'm an old lady at 34, like I feel like dark academia is very much something that the kind of slightly younger than me readers are into, you know, like maybe I'm totally wrong, but it seems to be, it kind of has kind of come up as a TikTok trend.
Yeah.
Which is why maybe I associate it with slightly younger readers. But, you know, be that as it may, we have now a genre term, so we do not need to just rely on The Secret History comparison. We can just say dark academia.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Why not? But I do think The Red Word for me was the perfect campus novel. Although, of course, big content note if you do go into it, because it contains very strong themes of sexual assault.
Yes.
So be warned.
Take it under advisement. But yeah, I cannot recommend that book enough. Do we have any more content that we'd like to discuss today?
Only one other bit of like gosh that we haven't talked about, which we haven't talked about because I don't think we have a huge amount to say, but it's worth hat tipping. The Booker Prize was announced last week.
Yes, it was. And the winner was Shuggy Bane by Douglas Stewart. I haven't read it. It's on my bookshelf. It's quite chunky. So, you know, obviously that's a barrier to entry for little old me. I had dinner in a part of lockdown where that was allowed with our friend of the pod, Elizabeth McNeil. And she was trying to read all of the Booker list. And that was her favourite. So I thought, you know what?
I also don't usually feel massively moved to read a book just because it's a prize winner.
Yeah.
If it's on the long list or short list, that will sway me, but winning doesn't really make a difference to me.
Yes.
So this one, I think, like, just the spotlight that's been shone on it, I've ended up, you know, reading an extract. I've seen, like, unexpected people praising it. And it's made me realize that, okay, actually, this is a book that I normally wouldn't have looked twice at, because I don't tend to read very many books written by men. And I've kind of realized that that's not the kind of reader that I want to be. I want to read more widely than just focusing on women and non-binary writers. And yeah, this one, you know, it's a Scottish working class queer writer who is writing about a, you know, working class queer main character. That sounds fucking interesting to
me. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm going to read it. Now that we have covered all of those various bases, we can once again remind you that if you have some pennies rattling around, you know, maybe if you are buying a book for yourself this week, you can buy a book for a child in care who might otherwise not receive any books this Christmas via our PayPal pool. I love that word. PayPal pool that you can find either by asking me or Alice for the link. We both have it. Or hitting a link in our Twitter profile, or I guess you'll put it on Instagram maybe, Alice.
It'll be on Instagram, and it will also be on our WordPress site. And you will also find a list of every book that we've mentioned in this episode, both on Instagram and on WordPress.
So WordPress is also where we keep our transcriptions. So if you have ever discussed this pod with someone who is either hard of hearing or just doesn't like podcasts, and they thought it sounded so good, but they don't do pods, you can pass on the link to the WordPress. See you next time. I have no idea what we're going to talk about next week, but I'm excited to find out.
We have some ideas.
We always have some ideas. But you can find us at WhatPagePod on the various social medias, and we will catch you back here next time.
Catch you later. Bye.